42, or 43, I'm not sure which, but they gave me the horrible decision, said that you can do one of two things. You can go back to Canada for staff college, which everybody was doing at the time. If you hadn't had staff college, well, you went back to Canada.
But you had RNC, though.
Well, yeah, but that's an entirely different matter.
It's still entirely different, yeah.
Well, staff college is, your staff was training you to be a trained staff officer, and incidentally, it was supposed to be a help for command someday, but I said you can either do that or you become second in command of your regiment, which you want to do.
Wasn't much choice.
So I became second in command, and I was sent to the Brady Senior Officer School, which was a very good school.
Still the rank of major?
As a major, yeah. That prepared you for command. I mean, that was the mm-hmm. senior school. In fact, General Perk went to that when he was before the war, long before. And then all COs before they became COs before the war were sent to the Brady Senior Officer School.
Just how was that? It was very intense.
Oh, you run in the usual British fashion. Their instructors are absolutely excellent. They had trained people and, you know, that had been through what there was in them before Dunkirk and had been at Dunkirk. There was a straight course in tactics, command, and administration for battalions, artillery regiments, and so on. You had gunners there, and cavalry, tanks, and infantry, and signals. It was all arms, mostly arms. Logistics person, as we say now, administrative and logistics, but it was mostly command course. That was, eight weeks, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure of that timing now, but it was a very comprehensive, good, thorough course.
Mm-hmm.
I came back from that. And,
what dates are we looking at here? What kind of dates are we looking at here?
Oh, 1940, early 43, I think, or late 42, early 43.
I have here February 42, you were appointed second in command.
Got
your regiment, maybe. I got it.
My memory is even worse than that. I was appointed second in command. Now, February 42, the senior officer's school would have been in the autumn of 42.
It would have been autumn of 42 for the senior officer's school.
About that time. And I didn't get promoted until
August 43. Again, you became lieutenant colonel in August 43, and that was commanding officer of the regiment in Sicily.
That's right. It was my birthday. It was the anniversary of my birthday. It was the day before. And it was the 10th of August, which is the date the Patricias were formed in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
How many years was that? 30? 20? 29 years earlier,
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, get you to Italy now. How did you get to Italy? What were the things that you had to do?
Well,
second in command of the regiment.
Sicily. I got torpedoed on the way out to Sicily, so I never did land with the battalion in Sicily.
Well, let's hear about this now.
Well, I had, Montgomery started this LOB system, left out of battle. In other words, your CO would travel on one ship and the second in command on another one. So you lose one, you got the other. And I was traveling as second in command and officer commanding troops on this, it was a freighter. It was full of vehicles, full of troops, full of ammunition. But very comfortable freighter. We started off in convoy with.
Where did you start off from original?
Liverpool.
Started off with Liverpool and went down to Gibraltar.
And we went down past Gibraltar and into the Mediterranean. Well, got up early in the morning to see that. I remember on the way up from Liverpool, I worked pretty closely with the captain of the ship, naturally. I remember saying, oh, please look at that destroyer with the Find the Jolly Roger. That means submarines in the area. And the captain said, don't worry, my boy. He says, whenever you see a Jolly Roger, don't worry about it. He says, when you get torpedoed, you won't see any Jolly Rogers. It'll be a complete surprise to everybody. So we got into the middle of the Mediterranean, and it was the 4th of July. And
you didn't stop at Malta or anything like that?
No, no stops. We gradually lost most of our convoy. We started off with a few destroyers, and then they tailed off, and I think when we got into the Mediterranean, I think we only had about two or three. It was still a convoy, a very big convoy. Cause I don't know how the hell we got away with it as long as we did, but it was a very big, it was a huge convoy. No question about it. But on the 4th of July, I was sitting after dinner, which was nice. The troops had all been briefed, incidentally. I was given a great suitcase full of documents, maps, everything else, and we were kind of just broken them open. We didn't know where we were going. I mean, we could have been Sicily, it could have been Cyprus, various other
secrecy
rumors.
Was still maintained.
Some hill, yeah. And so finally I broke these things open, actually when we got into the Mediterranean. And we worked feverishly over maps and things, our plans and our orders. And that kept us very busy. And when I say on the 4th of July, with everybody briefed and everybody all pepped up about what they were going to be doing and what the battalion was going to do, and I said to the captain, we were leaning against the stack in this great freighter, and I said, this is a nice quiet 4th of July, hey, unnatural. At that moment, the ship beside us just keeled right over. Actually, the old sea troops on that one, a great friend of mine, Doug Harkness, who took over as minister from General Perks,
That's right.
National Defense. So that was the first one, as usual. The sun was just about to set. That one got hit. He had a hell of a time getting out. The crew were all Lascars and rushed for the boat. I think he had quite a bit of trouble. our crew was not, fortunately, and so I think they rushed for the boat pretty handily. But the worst part was waiting to be torpedoed. It took half an hour from the time Doug Harkness's boat got torpedoed and collided. And then, of course, it was a very nervous half hour because you were convinced you were going to get torpedoed. And you were just waiting for it to happen, and you wondered what would happen. And by this time, Harkness's boat had sunk.
Did you go pick up the survivors there?
No, we know everybody sailed majestically ahead.
Bye-bye.
That's one of my saddest moments, watching the convoy after we got torpedoed and we were floundering around, swimming around the water, watching the convoy sail on into the sunset. But we got hit eventually, and it was a relief when you got hit, actually. When it hit, you sure knew you'd been hit by something, and of course, a great sheet of flame from the forward end of the boat.
Did you have everyone up on deck to get off?
Yeah, everybody was on deck. Just waiting.
all their
stations. And of course, the thing went aflame in the front, was full of ammunition. That's the first thing I thought it was bound to blow up, but with the fire. The Harkness boat never caught fire, but this one had a proper fire going. And the ammunition, instead of blowing up once, interestingly enough, went off one by one. It was a very noisy affair, but we were lucky. We lost a few men in the original strike from the fire, we got everybody off the boat and threw rafts over. Of course, there were enough boats for people. Various people got put in boats. And it was in the dark and the flame. It was a very eerie thing. I didn't know what it was going to be like. You have visions of the North Atlantic and being frozen to death and summer. We got everybody off, and we were healing nicely over at that point. And the captain and I duly shook hands, and we both clambered down a pair of ropes into the sea. And you wondered what the hell you were going to hit. Well, the sea was like a nice warm bath. Mediterranean was great. I never saw the captain again. Swam around, finally swam to a raft, and you know, some people were on the raft, and you just held on the ropes along the side of them. Very lonely feeling, anyway.
Well, did you destroy all your orders and papers and things, or what's the, do you have time for that? Or?
No. We had no worry, it was all burned up. Ship took a long time to sink, we could see it flaming away there. Took a long time to sink, though.
You didn't have any way to get rid of that type of thing? Or
no, there was no way of, you didn't really have to worry about it.
No one was going to get a hold of it anyway.
No one could get hold of it, and everybody was, had a pair of shorts, period, but no shirt, no socks, no shoes, no nothing, into the water, but, you couldn't get down below, and once the fire and everything.
Yes.
I lost.
Well, how long were you in the water?
We got picked up very surprisingly. It was very welcome when a corvette came back before dawn, and we were picked up by this corvette. And
yeah, but this is around sunset that you got sunk.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
You were in the water all night. Well, and when this corvette came back and picked up the groups he could find, and which was everybody virtually, there were a few drowned and turned over in their life jackets and flew in the water, but not very many. There was no fuss getting off the ship. Everybody.
How was the merge? You know,
got off more.
How were the men in that? Was it very?
People rise to the fore. There's one fellow who was rather distinguished, who was Buddy Frighton, I remember. He's done fairly well since. I don't imagine he was very proud of it. But we got him away and out, but quick.
he couldn't handle it? Or
he was an officer, major. However, got him off, and he was all right. Wretch, he got to a boat, too. that was the only. Chips are pretty good, you know, they don't scare easily. You're a little, they don't show it. And if you're floating around the water, well, there's much you can do about it.
You were picked up. I guess Harkness.
Picked up by this little tiny corvette. It was really crowded.
And Harkness's group was picked up also, is that correct?
I don't know what happened to them. They weren't picked up by the one we were picked up. They got picked up somewhere. They lost a lot more people than we did.
They were in a little longer time.
I think another corvette probably came back too, because they definitely weren't picked up by our lot. But we were then landed in Algiers, and that was a terribly embarrassing thing, because I was OC troops and a pair of shorts and nothing else. That was it. And we were briefed for an operation that nobody else knew about. So I met the British officer that we were deposited on the docks in Algiers, and the British officer there, and he knew there was some operation, but he didn't know what. And I said, these guys are all brief. You better whap them somewhere where they can't be got at. And, so we were put into a prisoner of war camp. So that was really, we were certainly in a safe place and surrounded by barbed wire, but we had to be, for D-Day was on the 10th of June, or July, I guess. I think it was the 10th. And this was in the 5th, so they were incarcerated there. Small things in life. I always remember the day after we arrived, we were all sort of prated to get our clothing issue because nobody had anything. Certainly no boots, socks, or anything like that. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to find out how little you can live on in life. You got two pair of shorts and underwear, or two shorts, I think, two shirts, and one pair of boots, a couple of pairs of socks, and that was it. It all took about half a kit bag full, and that was you're in business again. I didn't realize how much you enjoyed shoes. I didn't get any shoes until well on in Italy when a British ketchup came up.
Oh, no.
You could wear shoes again when you were out of the line. Otherwise, it was one dirty pair of boots. But I got out of that. I spent all the time trying to get out because I wanted to get there by D-Day. And I finally managed to get by some British commander who said, okay, I'll let you out and make your own way to North Africa. And that was it. I got down the docks and heard to Sicily. D-Day had come by this time. I missed it. And so I picked up a landing craft infantry, they call it, landing ship infantry. Very crowded, very uncomfortable, and so on. I finally arrived on the beach in Sicily, and great activity, and made my way to the unit.
So what had the unit done by this point?
Well, you know, not a terribly bloodthirsty landing. Not a lot of Italians were not the greatest fighters. Not the greatest fighters in the world. The Italian army was made a show of resistance. And so we started advancing inland according to plan, and there were no trouble. Except it was very amusing. The Italian generals coming to surrender, and so there was great pomp and ceremony and heel clicking and turning their pistol, handing it upside down, broken open. all very interesting masses of prisoners of war, which we never saw. We sent them all down back to the rear. And we didn't meet a German. I remember the first time we met a German. The Germans finally took over, and we, I think when it was our first contact with the Germans, it was rather like the textbook when you start off in war, the leading scout is fired at, and then the leading section is involved, and then the leading platoon, and actually pretty well ground to a halt. I don't know who it was, I think it was the Edmund Regiment, and so as usual, the company commander went up, the CO went up, the brigade commander went up, Guy Simmons, I remember, we were up because naturally you wanted to see what the hell was happening here. And I remember Guy Simmons coming along to join the thing, and actually it was probably a rather small party of Germans, which it was, anyway, it had quite a peaceful ending because by that time they'd gone away.
Now, you were still a major.
So the first lesson was quite easy.
You're still a major. You're second in command of the regiment.
Yep.
You're finally there, and we're talking what dates now?
July 43.
July 43. Yet in August 43, you're promoted to lieutenant colonel.
Yep.
And take over the regiment itself. Now, what happened to your boss?
My boss was, he was sent back to England. Where the hell did he go? Sicily, it was the end of Sicily, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a bit of reshuffling going on. I always remember my adjutant was a fellow called Stu Graham. Well, he was Guy Simmons' ADC at this point.
Kitching would be there also, wouldn't he?
No. Yes, he was. Yeah, he was G1. Tyson, you know. But I remember Stu Graham, the ADC, telling me that in line with the Montgomery thinking, General Graham, this is, I mean, I don't, shouldn't be even saying things like this, maybe, you know, actually it's more amusing than anything else, but General Graham was told to do something, take something, and apparently it was not done as well as Guy Simmons had expected, and Guy Simmons, like, in the Montgomery school, as he thought, fired him immediately. and Stu said, it was quite ridiculous, really. He said, Monty came up that night and said, "Now, Guy, now." He said, "Well, what did you do to poor Graham?" So Guy explained what he'd done, and Stu said that Montgomery said, No, take him back, take Graham back.
Well, Simmons came through there with a pretty heavy broom, though, didn't he?
So he took him back.
Yeah. Yeah, but Simmons covered quite a few people when he first came
over. Oh,
back.
I don't think so, though. Oh, when he first took over. Oh, well, he took over from, I don't think he really went through the heavy room. He didn't have time for one thing. He took over from General Salmon, who was killed on the way as an airplane crashed. And Guy was a very good divisional commander. I mean, General Salmon was an entirely different sort of man. Again, I was discussing with General Perks the other day, and he said he was a perfectionist, but very much on small details, and he lacked the old Perk spark, or spark that other people had to lead. When his plane crashed and Guy Simmons was named divisional commander, people had a lot of confidence in Simmons. He came around and spoke to all troops, all officers, particularly troops, and he said, "Some of you may think I'm a staff officer, too much staff, and I'm away, but I remind you that I spent the first 12 years of my life in regimental duty from 1926 to 1938, practically." So he was really quite a shot in the arm, I think. The division was terribly well trained and everything else, and gallantly followed General Samuel, I'm sure, but I'm a little prejudiced in favor of General Simmons anyway, because I worked for him, but he was a first-class div commander, and there was a lot of confidence in him. And the plan, he just took it over, and the plans were all made. We just pressed ahead with them. And so there was no, I don't think, no.
Well, what were your new duties now? You're head of the regiment now. You're in wartime. You're commanding the regiment in Sicily. Huh. And it's, I gather, a very responsible job. I guess you have to make some very crucial decisions. Were there new demands made on your time? What kind of things were happening?
Well, you're responsible once again for every man in the regiment. You're responsible for every operation, plan every operation.
Well, did you have any say now, like on planning operations and things, or were the Canadians, or not the Canadians, but your regiment, PBCLI, were they just thrown into the fray?
Oh, no, Chris Folks was the brigade commander. At that point, and Guy Simmons, the chief, naturally, progression of orders, and Simmons would say the division is to do these tasks, and 2nd Brigade will take this mountain or take this village, and folks would figure out the brigade plan, and you'd be given your part of the plan, and how you did it was your own business, but it had to be tied in with gunners, with tanks, with signals.
Well, how much say did you have in the planning as commander of the regiment?
Well, you had complete say in what you did with the battalion after you were told to take something.
You were just told what to take, and it was up to you to decide how to take it?
Well, you were told to take, but the brigade had to make plans to coordinate the people that were, I mean, you would set tasks for the gunners, for example, on a local level, but the brigade would make plans and say such and such third field regiment, Brigadier Ross was commanding at that point, and they will support you, and but they were also supporting two other battalions, and you had the brigade had to parcel out who got support when. But beyond that, well, I mean, whether you did it with two companies or three companies or one company or all four, or, I mean, that was entirely your pitch. And then, of course, you had your own weapon support, machine guns you had, and you had your own mortars that belonged to you. Each platoon had its own little two-inch mortar. You had all your own weapons to what you had to coordinate, and you coordinated the stuff that came from above.
Now, how were the officers under your command? Were they very, very good, very average, very...
Oh, they were all very experienced, because most of them had been there for quite a while. We hadn't been in any war. Well, I mean, we lost them in Sicily,
You went up very rapidly when you considered that just prior to the war you'd just received your commission. That's not true, but still, you became a captain, well, fair enough, in 39. But then you were, by 43, you were lieutenant colonel and the head of your own, head of a regiment.
29 or 30, I guess, then. My birthday, 30.
You're 30 years old.
Yeah. 30 the day I took over, or the day before.
How'd you feel with all this responsibility at that age?
Delighted.
Delighted? Prepared for it?
Sure. That's true.
Well, how about your fellows that you went to RMC with now? Were they in similar positions, or where did you just advance?
No, I think we were all, Jack Walsh was later became CGS, he was Lieutenant Colonel, Chief Engineer. We weren't RMC together, he was ahead of me, graduated just a year before I went in, but Jack Ross, commanding the gunners, he was at RMC with me. I were sort of sprinkled about and everybody, more or less. There was a gunner that used to support me. He was in my class in RMC. He was a major. Well, we were sprinkled through the piece, but most of them went ahead fairly well. Damn right, Jeff Walsh became a brigadier the next year, was chief engineer of Army.
Yeah, but he was a couple of years ahead of you, though.
He was 5 years ahead, I suppose.
Yeah, but you know, that's part of the wartime. I know you have a luncheon engagement. I better let you go now. Thank you very much, sir.